This is the year in review 2018 from Brownfield. Missouri was the bullseye for the drought of 2018. Dry weather helped Missouri farmers get their crops planted, but extension experts said the lack of soil moisture would become a real problem. Brownfield's Julie Harker has more.
Sean Cornelius of Caldwell County, Missouri, said conditions were taking their toll on his dairy herd and 1,200 acres of row crops.
Boy, they are really rough. Corn, I would say most fields, I'm going to call them a failure.
University of Missouri climatologist Pat Ganan called this year of weather the triple whammy that hit the state's ag producers hard and is having a lasting effect on forages.
And we're actually still seeing the repercussions of that. I mean, we're still seeing supplies that are running low in Missouri.
Ganan says conditions going into 2019 are a lot better, with a reserve of moisture and more to come this winter.
It's been a difficult year. Our hay crop was short. My beans are probably just going to average about 25 bushel this year.
That's Dwayne Shad. He's in a part of the state walloped by drought. But as he found out, rain, any rain, is all about timing.
What little rain we did get hit right for our corn. I had a good corn crop this year. Our soil isn't very deep, so we're not a high yield area. But for this year, I thought the 135 bushel that I got was very good.
Some farmers in the eastern Corn Belt experienced a drawn-out harvest season because of wet and cold conditions. Brownfield's Amy Simpson has this report.
In the first week of December, northeastern Indiana farmer Sarah Delbeck said it was a waiting game to get back in the field.
The opportunities to dry out have been few and far between. Now we're finding ourselves not only watching the weather forecast to hope it doesn't rain or snow or ice or whatever, but also hoping that it gets cold enough that we could get the ground to freeze because we don't want to go out and make a ton of ruts.
Michigan farmer Jim Zook told Brownfield Harvest in his area also went later than normal because of the wet conditions.
We're going to end up at about an average yield for the state of Michigan.
Southern Ohio farmer Greg Corcoran said the grain quality suffered because of the delayed harvest.
We may be looking at record yields, but the quality is a little bit unsatisfying.
Despite the challenges, many farmers reported above average yields. North Central Indiana farmer Mike Beard tells Brownfield he was pleased with his yields.
Turned out to be just a little shy of my expectations, but those expectations were higher than my yields had ever been.
Southern Indiana farmer Joe Steinkamp says his corn and soybean yields were above average, but nowhere near the record crop he had last year.
Everything is a disappointment the year after you have a record crop.
I'm Amy Simpson with Brownfield's Year in Review.
Thank you, Amy. An Illinois farmer struggled to get the last of his corn out and almost made it. Christian Dean, who farms in western Illinois in Adams County, tells Brownfield a strong storm in early October downed a bunch of his corn, which suffered from crown root rot.
We kind of assessed it and decided that we'd be better off growing and getting the corn that was standing, so we did that.
But then wet weather hit for a month after that.
Luckily, we got a little break there day before Thanksgiving, and I actually finished what I could on Thanksgiving. My insurance date ran out on December 10th, so I had to do my best.
Dean says he bought a corn reel to get the downed corn out. In Wisconsin, the wet spring, late planting, dry midsummer, and wet fall made it difficult to get field work done. Farmers, however, enjoyed outstanding yields in most of Wisconsin. Our Wisconsin crop watcher is Larry Lee.
Montello, Wisconsin area farmer and custom harvester Zeb Zills told Brownfield his area had more than 30 inches of rain in the month of September. Around 10% of Wisconsin soybeans were still in the cold, wet, and sometimes snow-covered ground at the end of November. Sean Conley said farmers should get what they can, but he says many farmers might be taking a loss on the remaining beans.
There's not a lot of bin space available. I think that's what they're ultimately banking on, at least getting some revenue via crop insurance versus getting no value out of it.
Conley said he had growers reporting elevators docking them more than 30 cents a bushel if the moisture was 1 point too high. I'm Larry Lee in Wisconsin for Brownfield's Year in Review.
Persistently wet conditions plagued farmers across southern Minnesota in 2018. Here's a recap from Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp.
Rochelle Cruzmark in south-central Minnesota pointed out that despite delays, it could have been worse.
I remember 1991. We started planting corn on May 25th. We started planting soybeans on June 13th. I do not want to have that again.
Following a brief respite from the rain, frequent storms led to ponding. Ryan Buck farms near the Mississippi River and was astonished by what he saw during a field check in late June.
I pulled in the field driveway and I thought, what is flopping around down there? I pulled down further and here it looked like they were carp.
Buck estimated at least 20 fish were stuck in the soybean field as waters receded. An abnormally warm May and June allowed late planted crops to catch up. Rain limited spraying, which forced a lot of farmers using dicamba to go to Plan B because of the state's June 20th cutoff date. The combination of heavy weed pressure and drownouts led to extremely variable yields this fall. Making matters worse was another wet pattern through the first half of October that included several inches of snow for Bob Worth in the southwest corner of Minnesota.
It's not going to be too big, but it's going to be a loss. I mean, we're going to go down.
The majority of farmers I talked to this fall were disappointed with yields, especially when compared to bumper crops of the last 2 years. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
When it comes to producing crops, 2018 was a year that many Iowa farmers would just as soon forget. One Iowa farmer says it's like riding a roller coaster, but Brownfield's Ken Anderson reports that it was otherwise not at all like a trip to an amusement park.
It was especially challenging in northern Iowa, where cooler than normal conditions in April and wetter than normal conditions in May delayed planting. Farmers were eventually able to get their crops in the ground, and June and July brought good growing conditions. But the rains returned in late August and continued off and on through much of the fall. In mid-October, April Hemis of Hampton, Iowa, told us she was still waiting to start harvesting soybeans.
I have not picked a bean. I have not combined one bean, and I am in the majority here. Hardly anyone has done any beans.
In fact, it was the slowest soybean harvest on record in Iowa. A frustrating end to a pretty challenging year. But most farmers, like Dennis Bogards of Pella, seem pleased with their yields.
Soybeans look to be mid-60s to upper 70s. Corn, we took out some 105-day corn the other day that went to 38.
Not bad, considering what crops went through in Iowa in 2018. I'm Ken Anderson, Brownfield.
And Ken, before I let you go, I want you to talk about the Nebraska growing season. It was pretty good there for them. Spring planting got off to a good start in most areas of Nebraska, and the good weather continued through the summer.
In late July, northeast Nebraska farmer Greg Anderson told us his crops look fantastic.
The dry land crops, I don't know, could look any better than they are. I just can't recall a time when they did at this time of year.
Chris Grahams, who farms in south central Nebraska, said his irrigated crops look great, helped by timely rains.
Mother Nature has been huge, and you know, it really hasn't been too horribly hot or windy. I think it's been a heck of a year.
What looked to be an early harvest in Nebraska was slowed by rain in October and snow in early November. Miles Ramsey of Kennesaw says they finally finished just after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we had pretty much 10 weeks of harvest, which is 2 weeks longer than normal. A good harvest, it just took a long time with all the wet weather and all the snow we had to endure.
I'm Ken Anderson, Brownfield.
In South Dakota, it was a year unlike many before it.
This was probably one of the highest rainfall years that we've experienced.
Doug Van Dyne, who farms in the southeast corner of South Dakota, grew record soybeans, winning the state's yield contest with almost 114 bushels to the acre.
We ended up being in what I call kind of a sweet spot, and we really never had that big deluge rain event that was damaging to the crop. We had just lots of nice, gentle rains without much wind.
On this Year in Review from Brownfield, we talk with Megan Grebner, who does livestock markets. Megan, what is your primary takeaway from the livestock markets through the year?
It's been interesting to follow. We've had some ups, and there's been some positives, and there's been some negatives. We saw a little while on the pork side of things, markets drop down a little bit and struggle. On the beef side of things, I feel like they've dropped off a little bit, but they've kind of maintained, and it's been more of a steady course so far throughout much of 2018.
Some of this has to do with domestic demand, but also there is some dependence on exports here. And I understand exports have been strong to keep this up.
Specifically on the beef side, it has been impressive, not only in volume, Tom, but value has continued to push through and set record. Several not necessarily months in a row, but there's been really big numbers throughout much of 2018. Now, on the pork side of things, it's been a little bit of a different story. The exports volume-wise have been pretty on par with the previous year, but value has dropped down significantly. You're looking at big markets like China and Mexico, and the whole trade and tariff game that's been going on there has really had a negative impact on the value of our U.S. pork going out into the global market.
How much was the tariff situation eating into the markets in livestock?
I think more so specifically on the pork side of things. You saw a 20% tariff on ham specifically going into Mexico. They're our largest purchaser of hams in general. So it took it on the chin there. And then you look at the large tariff on U.S. pork going into China, and there was a little bit of a struggle there as well, and it kept eating away at the value of U.S. pork, specifically going into those countries.
Let's take China, for instance. There was the meeting between President Trump and President Xi, and people seemed to be encouraged somewhat by that. How much did that bleed through into livestock?
I think the meeting originally had a lot of high hopes, but I think there's a couple of things that come into play with China specifically. We can talk the tariff side of things, and I think in the same breath, you have to talk about African swine fever. And knowing that China is the world's largest, not only producer, but consumer of pork. And as you take a look at those numbers, knowing that it's eating into their pork supply, there's the potential for it to find some support. But I think there's a little bit of disappointment in the amount of purchases or the amount of potential support coming in from those meetings and those situations.
Well, let's talk specifically about African swine fever. I know you covered African swine fever in an earlier part of the program. So how much did that play into the market?
I think there's a lot of hope, and I think there's a lot more hope going into 2019 that maybe that China's not going to purchase pork from the U.S. directly, but they're going to make their purchases from other countries, and that opens the door up for U.S. pork to enter those markets. I think one of the most interesting statistics that I have heard about the African swine fever situation in China is that they could lose up to a million hogs, or around a million hogs, and it would only represent about a quarter of a percent of China's hog herd.
What are your feelings as we get into 2019?
I think we're hopeful that there's opportunity. I think bottom line, looking at things, input prices are still cheap. I think we're going to see another huge hog supply and another large beef supply as well. And it'll be interesting to see just how things pan out. When they're talking about it, they're expecting these purchases to be a whole lot bigger, or the impact. I don't think we've fully seen the impact of the purchases from China. And while we know the soybeans are there, is there potential for pork? And does that support to those soybean purchases carry over into pork? And there's just been a lot of disappointment in the volume and how those potential purchases played out.
Thank you, Megan Grebner. 2018, the year in review on Brown Field. I swivel the chair slightly so I can talk to John Perkins about commodities. John, it's been a year of negativity for grains and oilseeds. What's pushing those markets?
Well, Tom, we started off the year with a couple of pretty bearish factors. We had very large U.S. corn and soybean crops in 2017. And then in order to take advantage of demand expectations, we had some pretty large corn and soybean crops coming out of South America last year. Now, Argentina's soybean crop wasn't great due to some weather concerns, but Brazil produced a record crop.
And of course, the big news were these trade disputes that were going back and forth, not only with China, but they went beyond that. What did that lead to?
I mean, we started things off, really, all this trade discussion really began with all the uncertainties connected to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and what that would do to U.S. market share in Asia and Oceania. And then we had President Trump placing those tariffs on steel and aluminum, which negatively impacted our relationship with Canada and Mexico, two of our biggest trading partners, our NAFTA partners, and we've got the USMCA, which is providing maybe a little bit of a bright spot there for both Canada and Mexico. But that still has to be ratified by the three respective national legislatures, and stateside, NAFTA still has to be repealed by Congress. The really big thing, though, that caught a lot of people's eye, of course, was the trade dispute between the United States and China, the world's two largest economies. They're the world's biggest consumer of soybeans, and they were able to turn to Brazil for a lot of those. But here late in the year, it looks like some supply pressure is starting to be put on Beijing, and negotiations are ongoing. There have definitely been some positive steps over the last few weeks since December 1st in the G20.
Gosh, already, John, we're hearing about maybe fewer beans, more corn next year. What's the outlook?
Really, Tom, this all relates back to the supply and demand issues here, too. Brazil is on track to produce another record soybean crop this year. And even though there are some early weather concerns for South America because of the expected El Nino pattern, mainly a dry pattern for parts of Brazil, excessively wet conditions for parts of Argentina, at least at this point, most of the trade still expects big corn and soybean crops again out of South America this year. But a lot of the emphasis is going to be on soybeans and the relationship between Brazil and China. And so that's probably going to have an impact on planting in 2019. But of course, we don't even have the 2018 corn and soybean crops fully out of the field at this point. There's still probably a few hundred thousand bushels, maybe even a couple of million bushels of corn and soybeans left in the field.
There was no lack of a lot of bad news during 2018 where commodity markets were concerned. What do you see for bright spots coming in the next year, John?
The trade deals are probably going to be a positive for U.S. agricultural commodities. Less so for wheat than for corn and soybeans, but there are some weather concerns for wheat that could help out U.S. exports there. Some excessively wet conditions in Argentina and parts of Australia. Weakness in the U.S. dollar going long-term would be bad stateside, but it would be good for the export market. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on there. And on top of that, what the United States has that a lot of other countries don't have, and it's going to take them years to get, really is crop quality. A lot of things impact the export market, and in the grand scheme of things, maybe crop quality isn't that important when it comes to a global buyer, but it's still something that U.S. producers can really hang their hat on.
Thank you, John Perkins, who will have the last word for this edition of the Year in Review, except for this. President Trump has signed the 2018 Farm Bill into law. During a White House news conference, Trump said the bill is a victory for U.S. farmers and ranchers. So many stories, so little time. On behalf of Farm Director Cindy Young and all the Brownfield anchors who contributed to this program, thank you all for listening. I'm Tom Stever, Brownfield, Ag News for America.